Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam. Gently swimming in the waves of Sandeha Nivarini, we are now in chapter 5 of this beautiful gift to humanity by Bhagwan. In this episode of Vahini Satsang, we will take the first part of this chapter. Bhagwan has very beautifully written a lovely poem, a poem deep with profundity, beauty and poetry. As I mentioned to you before, the English that we are offering you, the recording of Sandeha Nivarini that you hear before we start the discussion, is the translation of Bhagwan's original Telugu. For this program, we have been going back to the source and retranslating Bhagwan's original script so that we have every nuance of what Bhagwan has written in this version of the translation. So as we begin chapter 5, the Bhakta, as Bhagwan now, is waiting to listen from Bhagwan the concept of who am I. In the earlier episode, Swami talked about what is Chit, and now he wants to explain to us about that question, which should be the source as well as the force and the goal of every spiritual aspirant. So with prayers at his lotus feet, we begin this session. By Bhagwan's grace, we have Brother Bhargav, Brother Srinivas Rao and Brother K.M. Ganesh with us joining in this satsang session. So let's listen to the first part of chapter 5.
Well, my boy, I am glad you have come. Are you reflecting the answer I gave last time and practicing what has been told with firm conviction? Are you deriving ananda therefrom?
Swami, will any bhakta like me allow your nectarous words to go waste? Will anyone throw away the ambrosia given to them on their lips? The one who aspires to attain real ananda will not allow your words to go in vain. I do not know about others, but I am reflecting upon your answers night and day and practicing them. Swami, the effect of drinking the glory of your nectarous words is so high that the wait for 16th of every month is becoming unbearable. I am counting every day in anticipation.
Devotees should cultivate such intense interest to give up everything and go after meaningless, useless, fleeting and false illusions and develop great liking for them is commonplace in this world. This is what is called avidya maya. On the other hand, counting every day with eagerness to think of the Lord, listen to Him and absorb the essence of His message is vidya maya. If devotees fall into this maya, their lives will be sanctified. Never give up this effort for any reason whatsoever and ensure that it only increases but never declines. Then you will surely become a pure one. You will find fulfillment and reach the goal.
Swami, last month you said you will explain to me who am I. If I understand that also, I can be rid of the little delusion that I have and without the slightest trace of doubt meditate on you and be blissful. Is there any fortune greater than this?
Well, my boy, to speak about the real nature of I is very easy, but it is impossible to experience it and derive complete satisfaction. For me to tell you about it to my satisfaction and for you to grasp its full meaning, it needs some time. This month, the time available for me is not enough. Though it is like this, I am using all the time for the ananda of devotees only. There is no selfishness in me. My only self-interest is to be useful to my devotees. Throughout last month, I went to Nellore, Gudur, Venkatagiri and the villages around. Afterwards, I went to Bangalore and returned. What little time was available, I used for Prema Vahini. This month, I am visiting Hyderabad, Rajahmundry, Samalkot, Chebrolu and Nuzweed. So, there is no spare time. Next month, I shall tell you to your full satisfaction about the I principle. For the present, try to grasp the meaning of this folk song. You will understand who this you is to a large extent. This will help you get Vairagya to a great extent. Later, you will understand easily what is this you. Do not merely read this song, but think well on the meaning of each word. The song will certainly turn your head.
All right, give me at least that. I shall satisfy my desire. I shall drink the nectar and digest it.
Listen carefully. Tai, 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 doll. Behold the funny acts of this illusory doll. O Jiva, listen to the well-known tale of this doll, all about its past and future. It rolled in the mushy maya of mother's womb, but that brought celebrations all around. Was it not silly and surprising? Who are they to you, who laugh and rejoice, while you weep at the loss of your mind and the misfortune of being born again?
So those are the first three stanzas of this poem. I think many of us probably have heard Bhagwan singing this in the discourses, isn't it? Tai, 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 bomma. In fact, I remember the primary school children also doing a dance to this song. And it talks about a puppet. And I think the people who have done a puppetry show also of this, the Anandpur campus, I think, once had done. Yeah, so that's very interesting. Anyway, so going to the beginning of this segment, one thing that caught my attention is, even as the Bhakta is saying that, Swami, your words are so precious, will anyone throw away that ambrosia given to them on their lips? And I am reflecting on your answers, and the effect of drinking the glory of your nectarous words is so high that I cannot wait. It is unbearable. I think the people who came to Bhagwan in the early years, I know of so many people who longed for those discourses of Bhagwan, because the kind of explanations and elucidations they found for spiritual concepts, that is something that really baffled them. I remember talking to Brother Raghunath Sharma, who is a faculty member in the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science. Even as a teenager, when he came to Swami, he said that even though there were these miracles and materializations, but somehow that did not really capture his attention so much. But what really caught his mind is the way Bhagwan was explaining so many ideas which were so obtuse, all those difficult concepts, and the essence of spirituality, the essence of Indian culture, the way Swami was telling, he was really enjoying and drinking those nectar of those discourses. And since he understood Telugu, you know, it was even more blissful for him. And that is something that really captured him. And I think especially people who understand Telugu, for them it is really such a revealing moment every time Bhagwan spoke, especially in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and the flow during those years, it was so continuous, it was like an eruption of wisdom, and the flow was so incessant. So here, you know, the devotee is saying that, Swami, I can't wait for you to listen to the next issue, the next tenet that you're going to give me. And after that, Swami says, devotees should cultivate such intense interest. And I think that is where my mind rested. Isn't it?
And then one more thing is, like, we had all these chapters, and finally, like, he has revealed so many difficult concepts, and like we had avidya, then vidyamaya, and malina consciousness, then
yes,
pure consciousness, all these things. Finally, now I think after all that, taking the devotee through all these things, finally he comes and tells, who am I is the question which I will tell you. So looks like as if the zenith of everything is, who am I? Looks like that. So just when I read that, was a very funny incident in Raman Maharshi's life. One devotee was there. He was very upset with Raman Maharshi that every time he keeps telling, who am I? I love the form of Vishnu. So I will go directly and ask him, don't tell me all these things. I worship Vishnu. You tell me whether I'll get what I want or not. So he decides and goes to Ramana and asks him that, see, Raman Maharshi, thing is this, I love the form of Vishnu. I worship him thoroughly. So will I get what I want or not? He said, what do you want? I want to go and be in his loka when I leave the body. Yes, you will be there. Then will I be able to see him? Rama says, yes, you will be able to see him. Then after that, he says, okay, will Lord Mahavishnu be seeing me? Yes, yes, he will also see you. Can I speak to him? Yes, you can speak to him. Can he speak back to me? Yes, he will also speak to you. Then, can I ask him a question and will he answer? Yes, he will answer. Okay, what will he tell me? If he, after all that, when I reach the Vaikuntha Loka and then I'll be talking to him, conversing him face to face, what will he ask me? He'll ask only one question. Please find out, who are you? So, basically what Ramana was telling is, trying to tell is that, wherever you go, might be the final, that summit, before reaching the summit, the final dissolution, that question will automatically be there.
Yes.
Even if you are a bhakta or whatever. So, like, we have been doing this for the last so many chapters.
Yes.
Finally, Swami comes and says, let it sink in.
Yes.
Wait some more time. I'm going around and coming. When I come back, I will answer your question of, who am I? So, I don't know. I felt like
in fact, even as you speak this, what occurs to me is, even before Bhagwan elaborating on that, because this concept is such a deep principle, so even though Bhagwan is giving all these reasons that, you know, I had traveled to all these cities and I'm again going to these towns, so I have no time. In the meanwhile, you know, why don't you just read this poem? But I feel he's doing it because even before you can listen and understand a concept like that, your heart, you know, should have become more receptive.
Yeah.
That you should become more sponge-like.
Yes.
So you have to do a lot of contemplation, because these are, I feel, concepts, even though you read so much about it, even though you think so much about it, you actually cannot get it unless you experience it. And Swami says, experience is almost impossible. That's what Swami says.
Very difficult. Very
Swami
difficult.
Says that speaking about the real nature of I is very easy.
Yes.
But it is impossible to experience it.
Impossible to experience it.
And Swami wants the devotee to come to the stage where they will experience it, rather than expect Swami to, you know, give it by way of some explanation.
Yes. So I feel this poem is, you know, Swami wants the devotee to think about it much deeper.
Yes.
You know, go over, because the poem is very, very advaitic. It's very...
The way it's correct.
Profound. So I think he's only preparing all of us before, you know, you can even understand intellectually what that concept is.
I don't know. And one more thought which came to me, that especially when the third in the song, the third stanza of it, where he says, "While you weep at the loss of your mind."
Hmm.
I don't know. I immediately felt like this is a song which Swami has written.
Yes.
I don't know whether we know that Nataraja, in the symbol in Nataraja, the dwarf who's stamped by the
yes.
by the Lord, is called Apasmara. Means one who forgets his mind. One who forgets what he is, the real nature is.
Mm-hmm.
He is in ignorance because he forgets what he is.
Mm-hmm.
So might be he's, I felt that he's like Nataraja himself who is coming and actually telling this song to us. That, and because you have come out of the womb, you have forgotten what you are, and I actually come to remind you what you are. So that you know, I felt like that when I read this, the song.
Beautiful.
Actually, one senior devotee was sharing his interaction with Swami, and Swami told him, "See, when you are born, mother says, 'This is my child.' Okay. The father comes and says, 'This is my son.' The boy grows, he goes to school. The teacher says, 'He's my student.'
Yes.
He grows further. The professor says, 'Yes, he's my student.' Then he goes, gets a job. The boss says, 'He's my employee.' Okay. Then he marries. Wife says, 'He's my husband.' He gets a son. The son says, 'He's my father.' Now he's got a grandson. The grandson says, 'He's my grandpa.' And one day you die. And even then, the elements won't leave you. The fire says, 'Now you are mine.' The fire, okay. The wind blows. You know, the smoke is going. The wind is coming and claiming a part of you. Then you fall as ash on the earth. Earth is claiming, 'You come to me.' Your relatives collect the ash. Then the water claims. So then, who are you?" Swami asked him this question. "Who are you?" Then he was looking. He was waiting for Swami to give the answer. Then Swami put his finger on his chest. "That you have to find on your own."
Yeah.
He just put it. That has to come from within.
Mm-hmm.
See, any external agency, anybody does, no, it will not. It's just an answer we are trying to give, but it has to dawn from within. And for this, no, like we are living in a reality, society where everybody is saying he's mine, or some way or the other they're trying to own you. Even the elements at the end, you know, we have come from the element, we go back to the elements. But it is us when we are in this life, when we are alive, we have to really introspect. And that should be the reason why, because yes, we all should know who am I, but as human beings that we are, until we are driven to find something, driven to get, the desire is not there, we'll not go after it. So a point comes in everybody's life, which is generally driven by the question, what is my purpose? Because you end up doing so many things, definitely sometimes you feel, what is the purpose? And that answer to the question, what is my deepest of purpose, is to find who you are.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the answer, it answers sort of everything, and everything comes in the right perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So,
true. I mean, in couple of discourses, Bhagwan talks about four principles, four concepts when he's talking about this idea of who am I. Swami says there are four terms to be understood: Deham, Naham, Koham, Soham.
Wow.
Deham, Naham, Koham, Soham.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami says, as you mentioned, we start identifying ourselves with the body. Everyone identifies us through the name that we put on the body, a label that is put once the body comes into the earth. So, Swami says, how can anything that continuously decays be you? It can never be you, because it is continue, and something that is all the time stricken with fear, sometimes something that gets so excited with emotion and passion, something that gets so fidgety with the vicissitudes of life, and which is constantly only deteriorating.
Changeful.
Changing.
Full-time changing, yeah. Always changing.
Constantly.
And you remain constant in that.
Yes. So how can that ever be you?
Because there is a theory in medical science that every 7 years the whole body changes.
Yeah.
Every part of the body, every cell, every atom changes in the body every 7 years.
7 years.
A totally different person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So Swami says, so the body is something that is continuously not what it was yesterday. And then the concept comes, people start saying that, who are you? Then people have different answers. So as you said, you know, so somebody will say, I am a conglomeration of animal, different chemicals. Someone says, no, I am the highest expression of the animal kingdom. Somebody will say, no, I am a continuum, wherein there is an entry as birth and there is an entry, exit at death, but I continue. And then someone will say, no, I am a wave in the ocean. So there are different answers for different, for this question. So Swami says, all these come after the two stages of Deham and Naham, where you say, you think that you are the body, and Naham is not me, I am not this.
Mm-hmm.
So only after I pass the stages of Deham and Naham, I am not the Deha, I am not this body, then these questions start.
Koham.
Yeah.
Who am I?
Koham. Then Koham comes, and the answer is Soham.
Soham.
And the
so
answer
beautiful.
Is Soham.
Yes.
So the journey starts from there, and Soham ultimately is, you know, you are that. So you.
There's a very nice doha of Kabir Das in this. He says that Kabira, jab hum paida hue,
yes,
hum roye jag hase hum roye,
yes,
aisi karni kar chalo,
yes,
hum hase jag roye. When we are born, we as Koham, the infant will cry, and everyone will feel very happy and jubilant, like Swami is also telling.
Yes.
But you should do such deeds in this life that you should, when you go, you should just go smiling.
You are happy and others are unhappy, missing you.
Missing you because, that, oh my God, we are
yes.
losing.
Such a wonderful,
person.
Yes.
A wonderful
yes.
person. Yes.
Generally, it's vice versa. No? It should not happen. It should not become vice versa.
Yes. Absolutely.
And then two more things. One quick thing, well, because in when we chant Vedam, couple of words are like something which really strike us. One of them is the beginning of Gananam Tva Ganapatigum Havamahe Kavim Kavinam. Means Kavim. Kavi actually, according to a normal understanding, is a poet. But in the parlance of Vedam, Kavi is a person of wisdom.
Hmm.
So if we actually try to take a parallel between the two, it's a lot of fascinating things are revealed. One is a person of wisdom will always have a set of rules and regulations in his life, and then he follows it, and then might be he has an inner connection and then conducts his life according to that. A normal kavi, a poet, a real poet, will always stick to some meters. We have few, we call it chandas.
Yes.
Few meters are always there in the poetry, in the field of poetry. So when you actually compose something, it actually something which, like Swami said, you care, comes from within, and then you just compose it. Like a flow, like a smooth flow of life. So there's a lot of similarity between a kavi in the terms of a poet and a kavi in the terms of a person who's wise. So many places in Vedam, they say, Gananam to Ganapatikum Havamahe Kavim Kavinam, the wisdom of the wise is that. Mm. The same way, if we actually compare, that's what. A poet is the one who always, the life flows through him.
Yes.
In a very, very natural way. The poem flows through him. Under a given circumstance. This is one. And second is like one very, very, a word which always I have encountered in Purusha Suktam, Ishavasya Upanishad, is Dhira.
Mm-hmm.
Dhira is the one, according to the Vedas, is the one who is wise, who is realized, who is a sage. But if we actually see...
Not the courageous one.
Yeah, see, that's what. Immediately we will understand it's the courageous one or the one with patience.
Mm.
But in Purusha Suktam, Tasya Dhira Parijananti Yonim, they know, the Dhira knows everything. Sushruma Dhira Naam. I've heard this from a Dhira.
Mm-hmm.
If I actually go to the meaning of that, everywhere Dhira means a sage, a mm-hmm. person with wisdom.
Uh-huh.
So if you actually understand and try to see the meaning of Dhira, it is basically two things. One is one who's got courage, second who's got patience.
Mm-hmm.
Might be like Swami says, no, you have to tread the path. It is not easy.
Yes.
You have to do it. And then one place, which is reading it in Upanishad Vahini, is a beautiful statement which Swami says. Swami says, only a hero can succeed in this solitary internal adventure and overcome the monsters of egoism and illusion. He calls it a hero. And I don't know whether we all have seen, you see it in Mandir, I don't know whether we, there are four lions which Swami has kept around
us.
Yes. Like I remember Swami has told once, the lion is there with a purpose, to teach you courage, to teach you fearlessness. Whenever you're going on the path of dharma and going on the path of spirituality, never forget that you are on the correct path, have the courage to face the difficulties and be fearless if you find any obstacles on your way. So I know these two things, well, like when I read that, this comes in Upanishad Vahini, where Swami says this very beautifully. So I thought I'll just, these two are
please,
two
things. I mean, that is very interesting. You talked about the Chandas and the Kavi. You know, they say the Kavi is the Ravi.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Where a Kavi can go where Ravi cannot go.
Go, yeah. That is the Ravi, I felt light. But yeah, that is true. They say, you know, even where Ravi cannot
Ravi
go, Kavi can.
Sanadi, Kavi gaan, gaan
Kavi
okay,
can
okay.
go.
Kavi
yeah.
can go where Ravi
yes,
cannot go.
And, yeah, because he can enlighten.
Yes.
Ravi, you mean sun.
Sun.
Yes. Sun. Yeah. Ravi, sun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he can enlighten. No, in fact, in another discourse, Bhagavan was mentioning there are four things to be done for every person on the spiritual path, you know. Swami says, first is, you should have disciplined habits. Second, concentration of mind. Third, renunciation of sensual pleasures. And fourth, have firm faith in the Atma. So these are the four principles you have to stick to, you have to walk on the path
of spirituality.
On the path of spirituality. So when you mentioned about a Kavi conforming to a particular meter, a discipline, so this is what occurred to me. Because on the spiritual path, a disciplined life, disciplined habits is a must.
Yes.
Then that will lead to concentration of mind. Only when you have concentration of mind will you have enough willpower to not succumb to the senses every time.
Yes.
And that is what will help you to be steady in your faith and connect to the Atma. In fact, here when Bhagwan is talking about Swami saying devotees should cultivate such intense interest, in fact, I was reminded of one devotee, Mr. Jatin Desai. He used to help earlier with Radio Sai work. He is a management consultant and also a very, very evolved person. He did very well in his professional work. At the same time, he was very connected with Bhagwan inside. In 2013, something very dramatic happened in his life. In November 2012, he was in Prashanthi Nilayam. He had just completed a book on innovation. He went to Bhagwan's Sannidhi. He offered that work at his lotus feet. And just spontaneously, it came from him, Swami, this work is yours. Because he sincerely felt that he could not have done such a fantastic work. When he would read the pages, he would feel, I have not written these. A small, very normal person coming from a very average family in Baroda, and today the best of publishers wanting to publish something that he had written. He was writing for Harvard Business Review, and so he completely felt that it was his doing. So he said, Swami, this book is yours. And then spontaneously it came, Swami, this body is yours. Didn't think, just came, this body is yours. Swami, please make this as an instrument. And very interestingly, after he left Prashanthi Nilayam, a couple of months after that, suddenly he falls sick. And he dismisses it as maybe the usual flu and things like that. But then he's becoming weak, and when he does the blood test, that is when the alarm goes, and he's diagnosed with leukemia. And so during that phase, he says something very interesting happened actually. He was in a phase where he was in constant communion with Bhagwan, where every thought that was happening, every act that he has to do, Swami was telling, huh, do this, okay, get up now, brush your teeth, okay, now go and do the test, no problem. And every time he would ask, Swami, should I do this, your plan or my plan? Your plan, my plan.
Mm-hmm.
Swami would ask, Swami, your plan. Okay, then do this. Then do this, do this. So he was going through the chemo and all started. That whole 3-4 weeks, he was saying that when you look out of the window also, he would just see so much light. Everywhere there was so much light. Sometimes it was blinding actually. And whole, every act during the day, even in the nights, every single moment Swami was telling. And every time he questioned it, he will ask, your plan, my plan. Your plan, my plan. Your plan, Swami. Do this. So, that is how his spiritual experience was going on. When you connect the dots, there he told Swami that, Swami, this body is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few questions in his mind all the time. Swami says that, you know, you should have 3 principles. According to him, if you understand 3 principles, you can reach God. One is detachment, surrender, and then Maya. So he used to feel that you have to have detachment. He was not clear whether detachment comes first and then surrender happens, or first surrender happens and then detachment will come. So detachment, surrender, and then Maya. Because he has read that even if you have everything, until he removes that veil of Maya, you cannot reach the divine. So because that Maya also is his
own.
His is Mama Maya, Swami says. So it is my Maya only. So even if you do everything, unless he removes the Maya, you can never reach him. So he had all these questions. Apart from this, the other question he always had was, okay, I understand detachment to the extent that, you know, I should be detached from everything that I do in the professional sphere, even in my personal life, you know, be detached from all the members of the family. He had a young family actually. And he says, that I can understand. Okay, if tomorrow if I have to leave everything, I don't mind. I can just go and stay alone with just the bare minimum. But this detachment from the body, he's like, see, body, I have to carry my body with me, right?
Mm.
How do you really practice detachment from the body? You have to breathe, you have to live with this. So that was something that he was not understanding. And he used to think, why did Swami undergo so much of pain in the last 1 month of his earthly sojourn? That was all the time a mystery for him, that why the divine willed to leave the earth in such a human way. And which comes first? Is it surrender or is it detachment? And during that process, when suddenly this illness came and he was experiencing this complete communion with Bhagwan, he started undergoing these chemo sessions, and what would have probably taken, you know, 1 year, things were just happening very smoothly. And diagnosis was something which was very disturbing, but he was not feeling anything actually. And Swami was constantly there. In fact, when the pain was happening, Swami was telling, now my plan, your plan, my plan, your plan. And Swami would direct him how to breathe to overcome the pain. When you are getting this pain, Swami, okay, now breathe in. Now hold the breath. Even when the pain is coming up and down, how should he be breathing so that the pain does not affect? So to that extent, Swami was looking after.
Mm-hmm.
So he said he didn't feel actually. He was not feeling the pain at all. But he says, one day, there was one lady next to him, and that lady was very disturbed. Suddenly she would shout, and suddenly she was constantly complaining and all that. And so he asked the nurse, you know, why is this lady behaving like this? Because she was not sleeping in the night. And the nurse said, you know, she has a very difficult problem. She also has cancer, but she has this need to go to the washroom, but actually she does not need to go, but she feels she has to go. Mm-hmm. And she will fall on the way. So the nurses are trying to, you know, help her. So she was completely quite physically, emotionally wrecked. You know, they are not able to help, and she shouts and everything. But the nurses said, but that is not the main problem. The other main problem is she has her family, but nobody comes. No one comes to see her. No one bothers about her.
That's very agonizing for her. Especially knowing she's in the last phase.
Mm-hmm. So when Jatin sir heard that, Jatin started sobbing. Jatin sir started sobbing. Till now he had not cried. When he heard that and he saw that, he started crying. Then Swami said, this is suffering. When you feel pain for others, that is suffering. Till now what you are experiencing, that is only pain. That your body, I helped you to get over it. That's the difference in pain and suffering. Is true suffering is when you actually feel for others. And then Swami said, this is what he did in the last 1 month of his earthly sojourn. Swami said, he suffered for the world. To take the pains of the world. So, this was slowly becoming clear to him. And then, through so many experiences during that phase, he understood that surrender comes first. Only after the detachment happens. He had experienced how to be in the world, live but not be attached to the body. How can you can be in the body but not be in the body? All these experiences was going on. And he recovered completely. There are many stories. We have done like a 2-hour conversation with him. The reason I'm mentioning his story is, after he recovered, we did this conversation with him. And when he recovered, he was as healthy and as dynamic and as fresh as before. You never ever felt that, you know, he's a person who had undergone like chemo and so many therapies. But he was like, I was stunned actually when I looked at him and I looked at the photo. The photo when he was sick, it looked like, you know, he's probably in the 90s, one leg in the grave, face shrunken, hair gone, everything. And in few months, you see he's back to what he was in the 40s. That's how he was. It was really stunning. I was stunned to really see such a transformation. The doctors were baffled actually. He used to keep a photograph of Swami next to his bed, and the doctor would ask him, we can't understand what is happening to you actually. You're so amazing. And he used to always point at Bhagwan's photograph, and they would ask about Swami. Somebody would say, ah, no, my mother had gone 20 years back to Puttaparthi. They would ask for Vibhuti. Lot of, many stories are there wherein through him, lot of people also got Bhagwan's blessings. But the reason I'm mentioning his story is this, after everything, when you asked him, what is the most important lesson that you have learned through all this experience? You know, now you have a chance to live after undergoing all this. So, with greater realization, greater understanding. So, what is it one thing that will change now? And he said, intensity. Intensity. Everything that I was doing before, now I have to do it with greater intensity. That great intensity is what will make the difference.
Amazing.
So Swami is telling the same thing here.
Yes. Intensity. I was reminded of that only because of that. Because
I have a very quick question here, brother. In fact, as you are narrating this thing only concerning intensity, we know that story where the guru actually holds the head of the yes. boy and puts inside the water, you know. Yes. And he almost, the Shishya almost thinks that the disciple thinks that, oh, why is the guru trying to kill me or what? And he's trying his best to come out of the water, and finally when he's almost gone, guru lifts him up. And guru asks him, what is it that you wanted? He said, I wanted air at that moment. So that level of intensity if you have, yeah. then all you'll achieve. Now my thing is, do we have to wait for an I should not say dramatic, but something very, very serious episode to occur in our life? Or can we do something in it? Like, we are having a normal schedule, day-to-day life. Can we do something to get the intensity? It is not that something has to happen in our life and then the intensity has to come.
Yes.
Because I don't want that type of, so my thing is, how do we get the intensity then, Atkins? Even listening to the story itself has inspired me to be more intense and take my life. Because one thing which occurred to me even as you were narrating that incident is when he saw that other lady suffering or in pain, that immediately touched him and that pain he was going through. So we don't have to go through literally to get that thing. Even if somebody is suffering, you know, that itself is good enough for us to take our life seriously. After all, it's the same life, isn't it? Yeah. All of us, even the story that you said has inspired me to value life. It's something which we have taken it so for granted, no?
Mm.
We don't have to wait for something to happen and then get the intensity. I mean, just the fact that it can happen to anybody and what a transformation has that person has gone through. And when you ask that question, what is the difference? The moment you said the word intensity, the moment I heard intensity, it was like the jigsaw, no, which was missing, just went and fit in perfectly.
Correct.
Because that without that intensity, it's like we are listening, we are, you know, I mean, if you see Swami says Vidya Maya, Vidya Maya, even listening satsang of God also, the word Maya is still attached.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I was thinking, oh, even satsang has a Maya factor in that. Okay.
Yes.
So,
yeah, because
intensity is the answer.
The story Brother Bhagava was telling in the beginning about a devotee approaching Ramana Maharshi and asking if even after I leave the body, I will have interaction with Mahavishnu the way I am having while I am in the body. So, like with Swami also, we always want to continue this kind of equation to be remaining. So even when we leave the body, we'll be with Swami. All that is later part. But Swami means he wants us to become non-dualistic while being in the body itself.
Yeah.
So that is why when you come to that ripened stage, he wants you to go to that source of that question, who am I?
Yes.
So we ultimately that is the thing you have to, even when Swami was talking, giving a discourse on the 60th birthday, he said, I am not a bogi, I am not a tyagi, I am not, because we think that Swami means, we'll expecting that Swami will say, I am God. Swami said, Nenu Nene. So even
I
when
am I.
Yeah, I am I. Even when he is giving us example himself that he is means I am I. So we also have to work towards that direction only as to know who I am actually. Isn't it?
Yes, yes. And then when I heard about the intensity and what sir you're telling, 2 days back I was reading Upanishad Vahini. Oh my God, Swami's examples are so down to earth and so practical. He says that how for achieving intensity, for getting that union with God, he says you need purity of the mind. And now let us accept we have that impurities, let's say we are not able to see him face to face or not able to understand or being one with him. So he says, he gives a very beautiful, very, very simple down to earth example. I also didn't know something called as Chilla Ginjalu, means they're called some sort of a small nuts, it seems. Mm. What they do is, if the water is murky, the water has a lot of mud and all that, if you just put that that seed into it, what it will do is, Swami is explaining in Upanishad Vahini, if you just put those seeds in the water, what the seeds will do is, they will decant, they will put the, like, the mud will go down.
Sediment.
Yeah, sediment. It'll go, get sediment.
It'll pull the sands down to settle.
Down. Not only that, even the seeds will go down. Seeds will not float. The seeds will sediment, the seeds will sediment the mud, and they themselves also go down. So what happens? The water becomes very, very pure and clean. And he's giving the simile and telling that, see, if you do an act with intensity and with surrender and with offering it to me, that act is like that seed. What it will do is, it will remove the impurity and it itself go. That particular act will not leave any impression or will not leave any result or any consequence for you. It will first of all remove the impurities in your mind, and it itself will get removed. So what happens? You will get only the pure water of Manas Sarovara.
Yes.
So he says, for that our act should be very intelligent, intense, and dedicated to the Lord. That's what, like, exactly.
Yes.
I just remember.
I have a very frank question.
Yes.
Is intensity sustainable? I mean, I'm very seriously asking, because see, when we listen to a speech, when we are in a satsang, we are very motivated. And there's a difference between motivation and being inspired. Inspired is something which comes from within. Motivated is like, you know, when you are listening to some good speech and you get motivated. But motivation doesn't last. Again, you are grounded, sort of. Again, you are back to the monotony of work, deadlines, and you have to meet the deadlines. So how do we maintain that intensity or be in a state of, I would say, inspired state? How do we do it?
Always inspired. One thing,
how do we do it?
Swami has always told his satsangatve. So he says, actually, be always in satsang. Be always in satsang.
But always, it's not possible in the sense, yeah, we'll try our best. Means, again, let me understand what satsang is. What do you mean? What do you mean by satsang?
Swami doesn't say satsang means having satsang.
That's why I want to clarify. Yeah.
Because Swami says satsang means having the name
satsang
on your
satsang with yourself also, you can.
Satsang.
Satsang. Sat is truth.
Your company with the truth.
God.
Sat. So sat is the divine. So.
So for that, Swami has given the tip that you can do namasmaranam.
Yes.
Namasmaranam,
do seva.
That also is satsang.
So Swami says that every man, every person is a spark of the divine. And Swami says, so this connection with the divine should be a continuous process. So wherein the body should all the time resonate with this connection with every breath. So every time you breathe, you should feel that it is the experience of soham.
Yes.
So that way you are connected. And every thought that you get, you should feel that this thought is powered by God. This thought should be dedicated to God. So everything that happens through the body, everything that happens through the mind, if we are constantly conscious of this, that we are the spark of the divine, and it is the divine that is breathing, and it is the divine that is powering, and the divine that is thinking. Definitely, it needs practice. Definitely, it needs that continuous effort. Like everything that we achieve in the world, you have to put in
effort.
I think in the spiritual realm, you will have to do it with little more dedication. But the good thing is, because this is what the divine wants us to do, and this is what the divine is waiting for us to do, we will definitely find lot more support.
Yes.
Provided we do that with little sincerity.
Just to add to your point, 2008, I remember, like, Swami had given the January 1st Prema Bandham. All old students will come and converge, and we had the Swami's lotus feet. So in Poonchandra Auditorium, there was an open session. Swami told, okay, whatever questions you have, you ask me. I am going to answer. And people asked all sorts of questions. One person got up, one ex-student got up and said, Swami, people say you do namasmarana, you do seva, you do all sorts of, all different types of sadhanas. I have no time to do anything, because I leave my home at morning at around 5 or 6, 6 or something, and come back at 7, very tired. And there is no scope of doing anything. What should I do, Swami? I don't have anything to do. I don't have any sadhana. And Swami says, Swami told him, we all were witness to what Swami had told that day. He told, whatever act you do, even the act which you do in your office, just do it as an offering to me. That, Swami, I'm offering it to you. And he says one more, there's a rider. If you offer it to me, that should have that perfection. Not you doing it for the boss, not doing it for a company, not doing it for your industry to prosper, doing it as a perfect act offered, which is worthy of getting offered to me. If you do it like that, you don't need to do anything.
I have a very honest question here. When we say we are offering myself at Bhagawan's divine lotus feet, when we have say that, honestly, how do we ensure it's not just from lips, it's from the heart? I am very honestly asking this.
I also, very honestly. I also agree, but
okay, because
I still feel that it might be the first day, it might be from the lips, second day, third day, but 3 months, 4 months, 10 months, there will be a time where definitely will come from the heart.
Let it start with by lips at least first.
Okay. I just feel
okay.
No,
and then you start feeling it with your heart a little.
I think
a little by little.
Sometimes, but I don't know, because sometimes I feel, I don't know, it's not always, but heart is closed. It's not that I'm sad. I'm not saying that I'm sad, I'm closed. Not that way. Really, there are, because I've experienced what feeling is when it comes sometimes during the bhajans, or it sometimes comes when an insight dawns or something, you're able to reconnect and you see Swami's hand in that. Really, you feel you go into a different zone. But it is not 24/7. It happens very occasionally. So when I say I offer myself, I don't feel the same thrill which I feel when those experiences happen. That is what I, because I have a reference point. And all of us have a reference point. So every time I say, I really want to feel it, honestly. So
Swami also said, before you undertake any action, tasmai namah karmane, you offer your obeisance to that action. Prayer means with the prayer you start, with a sense of surrender, then praying that, O karma, in Telugu Swami says, nannu udhagatiki teeskellu adhogatiki teeskellaku. Every karma should lead me to something higher and not lead me to downward.
Okay.
Just pray to that.
Beautiful.
And then get on with your work. That itself will take care, he said.
Beautiful.
So best is to start offering, as you said, with just a word of mouth. I offer my pranams at the lotus feet of Bhagawan with all my heart. Say, if you feel it, then that words will turn into more deeper surrender at some stage. Surely.
Everything is a process.
Beautiful.
Till you will realize.
Absolutely.
Many times you
see, even that
when you start a speech,
Mr. Jatin, he offered his work first. Said, Swami, it is you who have done it. But the next step was taken by Lord himself. He said, this body is also yours. It was not his thought. See, the Lord has already taken charge.
Put the thought,
because his first gesture was offering his work to him.
Of
so
gratitude.
See from where to where it has taken him.
Beautiful.
And he did not even know what was happening in his body. And it went into such a trauma. And that was the time when the Lord was there for him. Because he has offered already to him in his own humble way, his little offering. But see from where to where it led him to.
Yes.
And now the intensity that is not coming from self-effort, intensity that the Lord himself has provided to him, because he has entered into him now.
Beautiful.
And now you know my time is limited. I need to, maybe this is just a warning for me, huge warning. I could have left this body without realizing these truths.
Yeah.
Maybe he was a fantastic corporate success he achieved. But supposing you don't know these truths, and then you leave the body, again you have to come back. Punarapi maranam, punarapi jananam. Swami talks about this, tamasha chudra tolubamma. Because this leather doll keeps coming back until it, realizes itself.
So what an opportunity lost if you don't realize it.
Yes. But as you, your question was very good, because that is in the doubts of every young man who says, where do I start? How do I maintain this intensity? Can I do this? Because I'm preoccupied with so many things in life, in daily life, because the worldly life is so, you get caught up in it.
Yes.
So the best thing is, as soon as you get up, you just offer yourself. At each stage you offer, keep offering yourself. Whenever you get a time, little pause to remember Bhagawan.
But I feel even if it is a lip service, even if we for the we are offering it for the sake of offering.
Yes.
But might be a time will come where it might come from the source. It might come. Because many times I remember if I go for giving a talk, offer myself Bhagavan, it comes like a very monotonous thing. Oh, because I have to do this also before a speech, before you start a speech. Mm. But when we do it with more intensity, or might be we continue doing it, because we had discussed this last time also, sometime before also. If saburi, patience, doing it again and again and again and again, like Swami had also told, then a time will come, might be it becomes spontaneous. Maybe you have to wait for that. Mm. That I feel, because we're all the same boat.
Yeah, absolutely. I think many times, even though we say that, you know, we are offering these acts, but if you look at all the things that we have done during the day, you know, probably 50, 60 things we have done, maybe 50, 60 minor things and 4 or 5 major things we would have done in a day, in the night. And if we really sincerely try to recollect, okay, which are the moments when really Swami was there in my mind, you know, okay, I finished this work, okay, I can say that, you know, okay, while doing this work, I was not thinking, I was really concentrating on the work, okay, taken. But immediately when the work was over, did I really think of Swami? The moment I finished the experiment, the moment I finished this program, the moment I finished delivering that assignment, did I think about Swami? I think if we can probably start there.
You know what I do? During the course of my work in the office, there will be certain times when I'm not able to complete a task and I'm stuck up. I really don't know. Really, it's not within my capacity to find a solution in that at that time immediately. Then I just pray to Swami, Swami, you only help me do this. And I also add one more little prayer. At the end of it, when it is all over, remind me to thank you.
Okay.
And it happens that when it is over, normally we just forget about it. Only when in times of crisis we pray to Swami. And once it is over, we is just like, you know, he has done his job, that's all. But again, I express this gratitude. Oh, yes, I did not know. I prayed for it and it happened. These are little things we achieve successes in our daily life.
And in fact, in another discourse, Swami very clearly says, after explaining all this concept of deham, naham, soham, koham and everything, Swami finally says, there is no way to purify yourself without acts, without action. And what is the action that will purify you? It is only selfless seva. It is only selfless action that can lead to the expansion of your heart and the cleansing of your mind.
That's what Swami says, chilla ginjalu, clearing nuts.
Yes.
Every act should be like a clearing nut.
But we are tough nuts actually.
No, how I... No,
with Swami's grace, of course.
How I understand that is, you know, really you try to experiment it by doing a small little action of selfless act. You see and it touches your heart. Once you taste that, that feeling in your heart, it is not that, you know, you have done something to somebody or anything. No. It is something beyond your own understanding. It's just an experience that you should have it. And then that grows. Yes.
And actually, there will come a time when you enjoy it so much.
Yes.
That you will no more will want to do anything that is not selfless. You will actually reach a stage where you enjoy that act so much, because that joy is something else.
The joy of giving, Swami says, you do not know the joy of giving.
That is what, you become his flute. You become his flute then.
Yeah, I mean, that is what Bhagwan was, isn't it? I mean, in his physical sojourn, what was he getting anything anytime? Giving constantly. I was reading earlier times in the 1940s, and Swami used to allow people to do Pada Puja. Actually, it was quite a torture physically for Swami. You know, he used to allow so many devotees to do that. Like, he has to keep sitting, they'll keep pouring stuff on his leg, you know, all that they'll keep doing and they'll keep washing. So he has to do family after family. But, you know, for them it is Mahabhagyam, you know, Swami Pada Seva Bhagyam Dorkindi, all that is there. But for Swami, it's quite a thing to
see. Physically, it is very
physically, yeah, it is quite strenuous. So, but it's fine, you know, like, I have to give. For him, that joy of giving was at a different level altogether.
In fact, once Swami was telling, once he asked a devotee, why is the ocean water salty and why is the river water sweet?
Yes.
So, I mean, conventionally, He didn't answer. He didn't want to answer. The Swami, salt is there and all that. He looked at Swami. Swami, you only tell Swami. Then Swami smiled. Swami said, see, ocean keeps receiving. The river water continuously goes into the ocean.
Yes.
Becomes salty. River is always giving.
Yes.
So it is, the more you give, the more sweeter you become.
Sweeter.
See, Swami also mentions here, I am using all the time for the ananda of the devotees.
Yes.
There is no selfishness in me.
Yes.
My only self-interest is to be useful to my devotees.
Yes.
The most, I mean, at this point, no, the most, the biggest enigma for me at this moment is, how do we forget such a sweet Lord in our day to day? Imagine, I mean, I'm just at this point of discussion.
So, true.
So sweet our Lord is.
Absolutely.
How can we forget? How are we forgetting Him?
So, you know, to also answer your previous question, I think the only difference between us and, say, a Meera or a Thyagaraja or a Namdev is, for them, that intensity is continuous.
Yes.
For us, you know, we have our own moments of Radha, we have our own moments of Thyagaraja, we have those moments, like one bhajan session, we are really feeling like that, you know. We really feel like that. There are, I think in all our lives, especially, you know, after having come to Swami and, you know,
yes,
having experienced at least to some extent what it is to experience divine.
You got that jhalak.
Yeah, you've got that jhalak. But at the same time, we again get caught up with the world and with the attractions and the distractions of the senses that probably we are not able to maintain that intensity. I think they were people who, for whom everything else had become so tasteless that they were fully into that with such great intensity that nothing around could actually attract them. But perhaps for us, I think that's why I felt that the only difference is intensity and continuous intensity.
Even in when we're talking about the seva part, selfless seva, act of selfless seva. I remember Swami, if you remember, during Gram Seva, Swami used to send us for Gram Seva. One Gram Seva, I think 2-3 years after he started it, he had specifically told the teachers that when you go and give this prasadam to the villagers, to the village people, when you go and give, he told you have to tell this mantra.
Yes.
Om Sri Satchidanandaya Namaha. Means, Swami said it is, I am giving it to the Satchidananda Swarupa, I am giving it to the Lord Himself. So, and not only that, as we told her, continuous, intensity should be continuous. Mm. So when every boy, we would have experienced that, when every boy went door to door and gave these prasadam packets and laddus and sari and dhoti to everyone, every house we used to stand, we all stand in unison, 3, 4, or 5 of us, and we all say Om Sri Satchidanandaya Namaha, and then we used to give. Mm. And it used to happen every step. Every doorstep we should do it. So actually, it might be Swami would have shown us that jhalak, that
I think continuous. I think all of us, we have had, you know, those glimpses.
Yes, definitely.
Of joy of giving, isn't it?
Yes.
It's just that we are, somehow we get lost in our things and we are not able to maintain that intensity. But I think if we really make serious efforts, probably we will experience greater joy, and I think once we get hooked to that greater joy, then nothing else will
matter. Really matter.
Swami made students do the Gram Seva just solely for this purpose, for them to experience the joy in their heart when they give with that feeling,
the act of giving.
And I think that every student has an indelible memory of being part of that whole process, and you know, and that learning definitely stays. That experience definitely sprouts with time.
In fact, one beautiful memory is there. I was a second UG boy sitting in the third block, and the railing was there. Swami was holding the railing with one hand, and Swami was giving saris. So the Sevadal was holding the sari, giving it to Swami, and Swami, with what love, you know, each person, no, as the lady is coming, Swami was giving. And it so happened that I think one of the lady was little, she became nervous. So she didn't take the sari in hand, and the sari fell down, okay. So the spontaneous reaction of that Sevadal was, so he just lifted the sari and gave it. Okay, because Swami had given, she took, but she didn't take it properly, it fell down. So Swami told the Sevadal, stop, give back that sari. The sari, because it fell, it had opened. Mm-hmm. Then Swami took the sari with one hand. He left the other hand, which was holding the railing, and he was like balancing himself. Mm. And he folded the sari neatly, and with a beautiful smile, he gave the lady with both the hand. Okay. Wow. So, I mean, that sight is so much etched in my memory. You know, when we are going for Gram Seva, when we are giving laddu or puliora or sari, you know, it is not just giving. Okay. It's the whole act that, you know, you're offering it to God. Mm. And that sight was so beautiful. I mean, it is not just, you know, just do it for the sake of doing.
Yes.
You become that, become love. It's love exchanging love.
Yes, yes.
Then, I mean, yeah. see, living with God is true education, they say. You know, just observe Swami's life, you learn so many things.
Wow. And I think the two words that you mentioned are so profound and beautiful. Become love. I think that is the journey for all of us. I think we can, I think we have not done justice to everything that is mentioned in this segment 5.1. We didn't really go into the song. Maybe in the next session, we'll spend a little time in the first three stanzas of the song.
We can come back to this
chapter. We'll come back to this and then we'll move on. Nevertheless, I think by Bhagavan's grace, we don't know how much it has helped others, but I think definitely it has helped all of us.
Definitely. Intensity, I can feel the intensity.
Let's hope that it helps us to move in this path with greater zeal till we become that love. Dear listeners, as I mention all the time, please feel free to join in these discussions. You can send us your queries, your comments, your suggestions, your experiences, your experiments. We'll be happy to share them and learn from them. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send your comments to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Thank you so much for offering this little endeavor at His lotus feet. We seek your permission and wish you a very beautiful day ahead. Thank you so much. Sarah.